Good afternoon. My name is Nathan Ramsey. I'm Executive Director at Land to Sky Regional Council, and welcome to our weekly Land to Sky COVID-19 call. We've been holding these calls for about the past year to try to share information and resources to help our region, our communities better respond to the COVID-19 health pandemic. Just a few ground rules before we get started. Everyone on the call should be muted. Also, we prevent screen sharing as a security measure. So if you have any questions, please enter those into the chat, and we'll try to get to those questions for the presenters. You can also email me at nathan@landasky.org, and you can also text me at my cell phone, which is 828-768-3216. It's 828-768-3216. But the easiest way is to place those questions in the chat function. Drew Christie, who is the Western representative for Governor Cooper, he has been really gracious to join us over this past year, for most every meeting. And we're grateful for all the support and the leadership from Drew to share what's happening in Raleigh and the latest updates from Governor Cooper. So I'll turn the call over to Drew to provide an update, and then we'll have a update from the League of Municipalities and the County Commissioners Association on the financial impact of the American Recovery Act for our local governments and potential resources that will be coming your way. So I would like to now turn it over to Drew Christie with Governor Cooper's office. Drew, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Nathan, and thanks to Land to Sky Regional Council for hosting these meetings. Before I start, I want to represent App State. They're playing in the NCAA tournament today, first time since 2000. I believe we're one of three state schools in North Carolina to make it to the tournament this year. So I think it's us, UNC Greensboro, and Carolina, I believe. So just want to give a shout out to all the Mountaineers out there playing tonight. So as per usual, I'll go over COVID numbers and vaccine numbers, as well as unemployment numbers, and then briefly talk about what transpired yesterday with the North Carolina in or allowing some parts of Group 4 to start being eligible to be vaccinated. So if we look at overall COVID numbers, as of today, there have been a total of 891,314 total cases of COVID-19, again, dating back over a year now. There have been 10.9 million tests complete, we're also seeing a steady decline in our hospitalization rate. There are currently 995 people hospitalized due to COVID-19. And I believe our total positivity rate is sitting about 5.5% to 6.5% positivity rate, right in that range, which is up just a tick, but it's still down from where we were about a month ago. So that's all trending in the right direction. Looking at the vaccination rate, I believe statewide, there have been over 1.2 million people fully vaccinated with both doses of either Pfizer or Moderna, or have had the one shot of Johnson & Johnson. That's fantastic there. Looking at our four county region here, in Madison County, there have been, and I believe these numbers were updated last night, so 4,719 people have been at least partially vaccinated, and 3,923 people have been fully vaccinated, which means 18% of all of Madison County residents have been fully vaccinated, and almost 22% have been partially vaccinated. That's really, really good. Buncombe County, just over 53,000 people have been partially vaccinated for 20% of the total population. and 33,681 people have been fully vaccinated in Buncombe County, which is just shy of 13%. So that's fantastic. And I believe for our four counties, we're sitting above the state average. So that's really good all across the board here. In Henderson County, almost 23,000 people have been at least partially vaccinated for 19.5% of the population, and almost 16,500 people have been fully vaccinated for 14% of the total population. And Transylvania County, 7,300 people have been partially vaccinated, which is 21% of the total population, and 5,327 people have been fully vaccinated, which is just over 15.5%, or right at 15.5% of Transylvania's total population. So again, those are great numbers, great news there. We're getting vaccines out as quick as we can. I believe still week over week, we're getting about 220,000 vaccines for the state. So that those are trending in the right direction. I think Secretary Cohen said early in April, hopefully, is when we'll get more Johnson & Johnson, and waiting on the ramp up for Pfizer and Moderna. So all those are trending in the right direction to get as many people as we can vaccinated. So moving on to unemployment numbers here. Currently, the state has paid out $10.6 billion in unemployment benefits. There have been a total of 1.46 million claimants. And out of those, there are 13,141 people, claimants pending for resolution for state benefits. So that number is slowly coming down. We're getting the money out as quick as we can to folks and getting their claims resolved. And once they're filed and moving forward. So as of yesterday, group four is, or at least part of group four, is now eligible to start receiving the vaccine. And those that are eligible in group four are folks who have a medical condition that puts them at higher risk for severe illness, or those who live in certain congregate living settings. So those are the folks that are now eligible for or to receive the vaccine, depending on what each county decides to do. Each county can move at their own pace, but from what we're seeing statewide, that counties and local health providers are ready to move on to the next group. So that's why we've opened up group four now, and the remainder of group four, which is all essential workers who are not front-facing employees, will be eligible on April the 7th. And Governor Cooper mentioned on this past Tuesday that North Carolina's we're on track to open up eligibility to everybody to receive a vaccine by May 1st, which is also the Biden administration's target goal as well. And then the last thing I would have is the governor will be holding a press conference next week to talk about the expiration of the current executive order and what will happen going forward. So tune into that. I don't know what date. Typically, it's either on a Tuesday or Wednesday. So tune in on either Tuesday or Wednesday. The governor will be making an announcement about that. And I believe sometime in the next few weeks as well, he will also be releasing his budget to discuss what his vision for the state funds would be. And so with that, Nathan, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you so much, Drew. Again, we appreciate you sharing with us. You're always welcome to preempt the governor's announcements. So
you know I can't do that.
I understand. You got to do what the boss, you got to respect your boss. So I understand that, but we will always give you that opportunity to share it first with the Land of Sky region. So, you know, to reiterate, refresh my recollection, you mentioned this, but at one time we were around 120,000 shots, first doses a week. Are you up to 300,000? Can you repeat that?
Last I saw, again, this was I haven't seen the updated numbers yet, but last I saw, we were getting about 124,000 of the Pfizer and about 100,000 of the Johnson & Johnson. So roughly around 220,000. A few weeks back, we were up at 300,000, but that was due to the 84,000 of the Johnson & Johnson that we received.
We did get a question in the chat about Transylvania County. I know there have been some challenges, and especially our rural counties receiving enough vaccines. I think that number's gone up a little more. But is there anything else you can provide to us on that? I think just from on the ground experience, we're starting to see more people, those wait lists move faster. And you're now, you know, local drug stores and others, the other providers beyond the counties are providing those shots. You have any further updates there?
So as to Tom's question there, you know, I don't know where people went to get their vaccines in Transylvania County or, you know, for any county in that regards. I think that's only internal information for DES and for the federal government, so they can determine allocations where allocations would go. I do know that Walgreens and CVS, their vaccination or vaccines do not come from the state allotment. So counties may be getting more than their allotment, but that comes from a separate allotment from the federal government that the state does not control.
So that's even true, like the FEMA mass vaccination site.
That is correct. Yes. Yeah. All the FEMA sites; those are all federally allocated vaccines, which do not come from or hurt the state's, you know, normal allocation. So that's just on top of what we're getting. So that's actually really good news. But I know Walgreens and I know some CVS's are, and I think some Ingles are as well now. Providing the vaccine, but you know, I can't speak to, you know, all Ingles or all CVS's across our area.
And Drew, we hope in the next couple of weeks we can have our public health directors from our region on a call, and they can give us, you know, some more details where they're at and are they still seeing choke points and you know, challenges. I know most of them certainly they've done an incredible job. Just shout out to all our healthcare professionals, our public health departments, and the work they've done. I know for most of them, even though they're vaccinating a lot of people right now, they probably could vaccinate more if they had the vaccine. So if anyone has any questions for Drew, please enter those into the chat. And Drew's been great to try to respond. I know while many of you are on the call today, certainly for Drew and to cheer on App State and the NCAA tournament, but to learn more about the funding that's going to come to our local governments. And so, and Amber and Bo can provide us more details, but my understanding, the state will receive about $5 billion from the American Recovery Act nationwide. I think there were cities and counties are also receiving direct allocations. In our region, my understanding, it's around 130 million, but I'll let Amber and Bo provide more details. So Amber and Bo, I'm gonna unmute you guys and I'll let y'all flip a coin who wants to go first. But we're incredibly honored that y'all can join us. I know you're really busy right now. Amber is Director of Governmental Relations for the North Carolina Association of County Commissioners, representing 100 counties in the General Assembly and other functions. So we really appreciate Amber joining us. Bo is, I think, Director of Urban Affairs for the league. Make sure I get your title right, representing over 500 municipalities in North Carolina. So Amber and Bo, thank you for joining our weekly Land of Sky call, and y'all are very popular today.
Amber, I flipped the coin and I lost. I'll go first if you like.
Sounds good.
And that way that Amber will make sure that you get all the really important information, and I'll just sort of set the stage for her. This is, Nathan, everybody, this is extraordinary historical moment. I don't think that we've ever seen, and I've talked to some crusty old city managers that I work with that have been around a long time, and they said in their entire careers, they've never seen anything like what we're getting ready to experience, where cities and counties, cities and towns of every size, every single jurisdiction in the state is going to get money directly, either directly from Treasury for your entitlement, CDBG entitlement communities, or it will go through the state to the non-entitlement municipalities. The state will not have any option to change the allocation, and they have a specific timeline that they have to transmit the money to our municipalities. So this is quite extraordinary. Congress and the president have really bestowed us a great opportunity. Here's what we know today. Direct allocation to entitlement communities. And I was just thinking about Land of Sky. I know, for example, the city of Asheville will receive $26.1 million. I believe Buncombe County will receive $50 million. Both of those sums will come to jurisdictions, both cities and counties, in two tranches, the first of which will come directly to your accounts within 30 days of the president signing the bill, which was a week ago today. The second tranche will be 1 year after that. So it's a 50-50. The real question, and I'm getting this question from everyone, I'm trying to get information as we can out of Washington, Nathan, what can this money be used for? The law says very clearly four categories that the funding can be used for. The first of those is to address the public health emergency with respect to COVID-19 or its negative economic impacts. So that's a really broad term, including assistance to households, small businesses, nonprofits, or aid to impacted industries such as tourism, travel, and hospitality. So that's the first category. The second has to do with premium pay to employees. The third category has to do with covering revenue loss. So if you can document loss of revenue, this money would be allowed to backfill revenue losses. And then the fourth category, which was particularly interesting to me, came in through the US Senate at the last minute, and that is to make necessary investments in water, sewer, and broadband infrastructure. So those are the four categories. Pretty broad, really not clear at this point. And Amber, if I'm correct, we will be waiting for specific guidance from the US Treasury, and Secretary Yellen will be issuing that. We don't know when, but we hope soon. And that is when you really should get down to brass tacks and start thinking about how you're going to spend the money in your jurisdiction once we have that guidance in place. I do know that the municipalities that I've been talking to are certainly sitting around tables trying to figure out where this money will be best spent. This is one-time money, quotation marks. Actually, you're going to get it in two tranches, as I said a minute ago, but it's one-time money, so it shouldn't be used for things that are going to create ongoing programmatic expenses. So that's the first thing that everyone's talking about. Potentially capital investments, things like that, aid to local businesses. So that's sort of the one of the guiding principles. But we're going to be waiting for that specific guidance from the US Treasury. And I'm working through the League of Municipalities, is working through the League of Cities. I'm working with the US Conference of Mayors to get information to Secretary Yellen and the folks at the Department of Treasury on the kind of things that we're interested in doing with the funding so that they factor that into their consideration as they put the guidance together. So I'll stop right there, Nathan, and see if you want to just hand it over to Amber to pick it up from the county side.
That's fine. And But you're clear, though, that unlike the CARES Act funds earlier that were quite prescriptive, these funds, the flexibility of them are really what is. It's not only the size of the funding, it's that flexibility that you didn't have with CARES Act funding, because
it's so, you know,
what we heard from local governments all along was that it was really bureaucratic, somewhat of a challenge to program that.
I think that's a really good way to put it, and I'm sure Amber will add to that. But I think it's so flexible right now that we're concerned we don't know exactly what it can be used for. I think that's really the challenge, and we're cautioning everyone to take a deep breath and let's wait for some of this guidance. I know that that communities are all talking about this. Council members, commissioners are all being lobbied by local organizations for help, and I think that's really important. But you know, let's take a deep breath, wait for the guidance from Treasury, and really put in place good processes. And I will just say one quick thing about this. This is an extraordinary opportunity, but let's do a really good job of doing spending this money wisely and carefully and in a transparent way to demonstrate to taxpayers all across the country that we're doing a really good job with this. So Amber, I'm sorry, I'll hand it over to you.
No problem. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. It's good to be here with you this afternoon. I'm going to ditto a lot of what Bo says, and that this is truly an historic amount of money. In addition to the state and local aid, there's lots of money for small business relief, particularly industry-focused relief, tourism. I know that's a really big thing in this part of the state. Also related to Western North Carolina. I know this is Land of Sky and not just all of Western North Carolina, but there's also funds for PILT communities. So we're excited to see that too. I'm gonna link here.
And PILT communities, Amber, you're referring to the payment in lieu of taxes. So for those communities that have large amounts of federal lands that are in like the Pisgah National Forest, Great Smokies, they receive payments for PILT payments. So those are enhanced through this bill.
Absolutely. So I'll also put in the chat if you would like to look at your county allocation or your, well, I don't have the municipal allocations, I'm sorry, but your county allocations according to NACO. As Bo said, we're really waiting for Treasury guidance to see how this money can be spent, because the bill is very broad in its description. So we're looking at $130.2 billion with a B dollars that will come to local governments, $20 billion also to tribal governments, and that's also important in this part of the state, $2 billion to North Carolina counties. And as I said, you can see what your county allocation will be by that link. As Bo said, there are some uses and guardrails. So response to COVID-19, provision of county services, investments in infrastructure, water, sewer, broadband. I know that the League of Municipalities has increasing access to broadband as one of their legislative priorities. It's our number one legislative priority. So we were really excited to see that option for the use of these funds. It's really a good time if you've been thinking about sort of a capital project or any sort of investment in broadband. Here it is, like raining down money for you these uses. There are some things that aren't allowed for these funds, including any sort of investment in pension funds. That was a sticking point for all of the CARES Act bills that did and did not pass. It was really a talking point about why local governments shouldn't get these funds, state local governments shouldn't get these funds. So that use is prohibited in the bill. So as Bo said, funds distributed in two tranches. The deadline for spending is December 31st, 2024. I sure don't know, but this is a lot of money to spend, and this seems like enough time to spend it, but I would not be surprised if that deadline changed over the next few years, depending on how folks are getting through these dollars. There are some pretty stringent requirements for reporting. Again, there will be some pretty stringent requirements for reporting on the uses of these funds. And again, so much is dependent on the Treasury guidance that I can't offer specifics right now, but we do anticipate that federal guidance coming down in the next few weeks. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have. I sort of flew through that faster than I expected to.
Amber and Bo, you, there was a question in the chat regarding the two tranches. So is that for all local governments? It's not just the entitlement cities and those are receiving funds directly from Treasury?
I don't know. I do know that the two tranches apply to local governments that are receiving funding directly from the Treasury. I'm not sure about those that it comes through from the state. Bo, do you know?
Oh, I will unmute you, Bo. I apologize. I'm asking to unmute you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. The beauties of Zoom.
There we go. Awesome. Can you guys hear me now?
Yes, sir.
All right. Sorry. I made the mistake of muting myself and didn't have the ability to unmute myself. The money will go to both entitlement and non-entitlement municipalities. The Treasury Department will transmit the money directly to the entitlement communities through the CDBG mechanisms. And then the state of North Carolina will distribute the money based on the precise numbers presented to them by the Department of Treasury. And they have a timeline that they have to get that money out. And I believe, Amber, that the counties will get the money directly from Treasury as well, if I'm correct about that.
Mm-hmm. Another question in the chat regarding broadband. We know, you know, there are some restrictions on municipal broadband, local government broadband, their bills in the General Assembly, trying to address that. So to some extent, it's a little challenging for local governments to make investments because most of this is private infrastructure. Certainly they can, you know, create like Wi-Fi projects and, you know, access public areas in educational institutions and things like that. Any thoughts there, how the interplay between those state restrictions and this funding?
That's a really good observation. I'm sure Amber can add to this, but yes, we have to operate within the context of our law in North Carolina. So it will be limited. I know that I've talked to a number, Nathan, you alluded to this. I've talked to a number of folks in municipalities that are looking at their own, you know, public Wi-Fi is certainly eligible for public expenditures. And then your own backbone to support your own services is something that's available. And I don't know how that impacts schools and the like from the county side, Amber.
Sure. So yes, the way that counties can use revenue from all places is severely restricted by the legislature. We're working on getting some, it seems like a moment where local governments are getting all this funding. We're in the midst of a pandemic where everybody's very acutely aware of broadband. It seems like a time for the legislature to allow counties to use these funds how they want. So we're working on some legislation that hopefully will do that. We're optimistic.
And you know, this doesn't count the funds the state will receive. And I think, you know, what guidance we've received earlier is, and certainly things are subject to change, but you know, the great grant program that's already in place, mm-hmm. it's anticipated there'll be a good bit additional funding, you know, in that program, whether they come up with something else or to your point, and to give local governments more flexibility. Certainly that's something we all want. Landis-Sky passed our legislative agenda, I guess last month, and broadband is the first priority of those three priorities. Chairman Newman with Buncombe County has a question regarding affordable housing. Housing is in great demand in our region. The lack of affordable housing is been made much more acute by the COVID-19 pandemic. We're one of the most unaffordable regions in the state as far as housing prices relative to our income and wages. I'm sure other areas like coastal areas and have similar challenges. Any thoughts on ways that local governments can use these funds for affordable housing? Have you heard of other local governments with some plans or thoughts in that regard?
I mean, first, and Amber can add to this too, I know that continued assistance for folks that have that are behind on their rent, that is certainly eligible. And in fact, I don't know if Paige is on the line with us from the Association of County Commissioners. She's been working hard on some of the issues with that. And Paige, you're welcome to address that. I know that I've talked to a number of cities who are interested in how they might use this to address affordable housing brownie. I think that's a great question. And we're really gonna have to wait for the guidance. This two tranches of money that we've talked about here may be eligible, but we're gonna have to tie it back to COVID specific. Paige, do you wanna add anything about the rental assistance and utility assistance?
And Paige, I'm asking to unmute you. So, okay, good deal.
Got it. Thanks, Nathan. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Paige Worsham with the County Commissioners Association. Thanks, Beau. Commissioner, I think two things on this question. Beau's absolutely right that in addition to the emergency rental assistance funds that were in the December package, and I know Buncombe was a direct recipient, or I guess a direct allocation government of those funds, they will also be eligible for a direct allocation of additional emergency rental assistance funds from this ARP package. And those would go towards rental and utility assistance. And so that will be a large investment in that. In terms of capital projects, you know, this whole time I've been trying to kind of compare this to CRF because it's not a direct comparison, you know, completely, but in the sense that we did have Treasury guidance, it was federal funding, it did have kind of restrictions around it, much like the ARP.
And Paige, to clarify, CRF was funding provided earlier to local governments in sort of the CDBG area, but I think it's Corona's relief funds or something. I was trying to remember what CRF stood for. But.
Yeah, thanks, Nathan. Yeah. From the CARES Act, it was the funding for that.
I butchered that explanation, by the way.
But there were questions around capital projects and using that money. And the kind of feedback that the Treasury provided at the time was you really have to look at the timeline. And at the time, you know, you had to expend these funds by the end of 2020. This was before they extended the deadline to 2021. But, you know, I think the question now will be, okay, so the timeline is longer. So if you can tie that eligible project, even if it's a capital project, to COVID need, to that assistance that's allowed to individuals, and that's specifically spelled out in the law. And if you can have that project, you know, I don't know what Treasury would say in terms of, is it encumbered? Is it in process? Is it, you know, completed? I don't know, but just basically the runway is longer. So that's kind of what I've been trying to analogize to as a possibility. That was a long answer.
And Paige, if you step back and, you know, these funds ultimately are non-recurring. So when I think of financial planning for local governments, if you get non-recurring funds, you automatically think of one-time projects like a capital project that, you know, you don't necessarily hire additional staff that you would have to pay after this time is going because you may not have that revenue. So if we think of it in that sense, these one-time type projects, how does that fit in the housing space and some of the other, you know, I guess certainly that would apply to like water, sewer, broadband.
And that's why the broadband the broadband possibility I think is appealing for so many reasons, because it would be that one-time expenditure. It's obviously needed. North Carolina has been, local governments have been working toward that for a long time. And it would be that investment that when you don't have those budget dollars coming in after, you know, basically 2024 or mid-year of fiscal year 25, you know, you would have to stop spending it.
Amber, Beau, any further thoughts on the non-recurring part of this, the fact that?
No, I think what you said about pay tab was very well put. I'd agree. Yeah.
No, I think that's a really good observation. And, you know, one of the questions, the law actually forbids states from reducing their taxes based on this money. There has been some debate. And in fact, I think there was a decision today from Secretary Yellen that that doesn't mean states can't reduce their taxes. You just have to decouple it from this money very clearly. That restriction does not apply to us. So that's something to think about. The real key here is to think about this being one-time money. We want to 5 years from now be able to look back and say it made a difference. And we want to be able to demonstrate to taxpayers that we use this money really well. So one-time capital investments obviously are a good thing. The other thing, we had a conversation, we had the mayors I work with, we had a call last week with the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and they did encourage folks to really think about those people in your community that really need help now today. If you have an existing program in place that fits the framework of this, maybe helping small businesses in your community or something like that, don't delay too long to help them out, because that's certainly one of the purposes that Congress intended, is to spend this money to help small businesses, to help create communities that maybe haven't been as well represented in the conversations and issues around COVID-19 and the economic impact. Think about things you can do for them sooner rather than later. So that's one of the things that we've been encouraged by our folks in DC to think about.
We received a couple of questions through the chat. One is, maybe could you go over those four categories briefly again? The second, transportation, we know, especially for our municipalities, Powell bill, I'm not sure how much that's been impacted, but we know how NCDOT has been challenged. We know there's been a tremendous increase in the cost for like the transit systems or operations. Is there any thoughts on local governments using these funds for transportation? Do you see a place where that might fit?
Yeah, I mean, for municipalities, transportation is a big part of our budgets in most cases. Two quick things. Interestingly enough, NCDOT's financial and fiscal crisis that we were talking about a year ago is actually disappeared for the short term. I mean, right now they have over $1 billion in the bank. They're way above their cash balance expectations. So hopefully that was a short-term problem is kind of receded into the background a little bit. As to using this money for transportation, it's going to have to be tied back to the impact and the negative economic impacts of COVID-19. But there is some conversation, for example, if you have a main street, a downtown main street in a small town, where the businesses have really been harmed, I think it would be easy to make a case that working on streetscapes and bringing back businesses, doing something to improve the economic outlook for a downtown might well be appropriate use of transportation infrastructure investments. But I think we're gonna have to wait and see what the guidance looks like from Treasury. But you can be sure that folks are thinking about that all along the way. And I will just two other real quick things. The League of Municipalities is actually hosting a session on the 23rd of March, which is next week at 10 a.m. On the League's website, there is a place to register for this. They opened the registration up. This is an educational event, a primer on the American Rescue Plan, what we're talking about now. They opened it up, and within, I think 3 hours, they had 280 people sign up for it. The space is limited. So I think the latest I saw, we have about 400 people signed up for this session. So I encourage anyone that's interested to go ahead and sign up for that. It's on the League's website. And while Amber, I don't know if you want to add to that, I can even pull up those four categories here. Can we share screens, Nathan? Would that be helpful?
I will allow you to share the screen.
Do you have that, Amber? Do you have those easily available?
Yeah, I can. Here, I'm going to go ahead and I'm just going to paste them.
So I'm allowing screen sharing now, so everybody be on good behavior.
Okay, hold on. Let's see what I'm doing. What are we seeing?
You got it. Uses and guardrails. There you go.
So those are the four. I mean, and I really, speaking to what Paige said a little bit a while ago, and I'm looking at Eric Jackson. Hey, Eric, we've never met. Eric's question in the chat, that really tying back whatever expense you have to COVID is the key. And from where I sit, remediating impacts of the pandemic is very much an allowed use of the funds.
So I'll speak in my preference for workforce development. For all those who have lost their jobs, have been dislocated to the pandemic, is there an opportunity for those local governments? I know there's a lot of funding for community colleges and others through GEAR funding, other funding for actual the cost of the education, the training component, but all those other things that those that are facing difficulty, you know, supportive type services, transportation, childcare. Do you see an opportunity there to help individuals to so they can transition to a better opportunity if they've been negatively impacted?
Yeah, I mean, go ahead, Paige.
Well, I was just going to say, so I think that that's actually a really important part of this, and I think that, you know, we're talking and focused with you all on the local government money, but you know, I think either Bo or Amber mentioned that the state is receiving from this same state and local fiscal recovery fund over $5 billion. So that's in addition to what, you know, the counties and municipalities are receiving directly. And while they are subject to, you know, these same, they have to comply with these same uses, and they have the, you can't put it in pension, and you know, you can't directly use it to reduce your taxes, they have all of that ability as well. And I'm thinking about, again, I compare it to the Coronavirus Relief Fund because that's the only thing that we can compare it to right now. And, you know, they sent out the extra credit grant funds to parents, and they invested a lot of their Coronavirus Relief Fund in YMCA and childcare. And so there were all these assistance programs that the state used its CRF from. And that was in addition to the local governments who were able to use for like a, you know, a small business grant or you know, some targeted assistance. So I think that absolutely the opportunity is there to provide those kind of different streams of assistance. And I think that the state is likely going to be looking at that as well with its portion.
Yeah, I was just going to mention, here's the language in the law. So you can see Treasury has got to manage the expenditure of over $130 billion. And these are this is all the information they have today. So they've got a lot of work to do. But as Paige was saying, if you look at number A there, and I hope everyone can see that clearly on the screen. Can you see those, Paige?
Mm-hmm.
If you look at A there, there's some real opportunities for the state and local governments to think about what they can do to help individuals. I think workforce retraining, I think those are certainly things that in my mind would fit in that. We just hope, one of the things I'll tell you, and we've been encouraged to send information, and I know NACO will be working on these sorts of things as well. Both the League of Cities, the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and NACO have been encouraged to share information with Treasury on the things we think we should use this money for. So if you have some specific ideas, I'm sure Paige and Amber from the county side would love to hear what your counties are thinking about. We're doing the same thing with the municipalities. We're gonna flow that up through our national organizations to the Department of Treasury. So if you have good ideas, please share them with us. But think about these four criteria that are set in the law and help tie whatever you have back to these criteria.
And one thing I think local governments often face, certainly I feel their pain at Land O'Sky. Oftentimes, even when we receive additional funding to help our communities, one of the challenges we have is our staff is already busy, overwhelmed with our existing, you know, work plan. And so when we get additional funds, it's unless we have some staffing support to be able to meet all the compliance and programmatic responsibilities, it's a real stress to be able to do that. Will local governments be able to, you know, help compensate their staff or have project management opportunities to help administer these funds? I think especially for our smaller governments, you know, they just may not have the staff in place to do this.
I think it's safe to say that whatever guidance comes out from Treasury will certainly incorporate that. And correct me if I'm wrong, Paige and Amber, but I think past language around this type of work did include a percentage set aside for the cost of administering the funds. I want to say 10% was something I've seen before. Does that sound right to you all?
This is an interesting one. And I will say that this is probably one of the top questions that we've submitted to NACO and others have submitted to NACO to try to ask them to speak to this. Because Beau's right, we've seen the 10% allowance in the Emergency Rental Assistance Program. The CRF, it was a little confusing in the way that they allowed administrative costs. You know, they had to be related to that COVID tracking. They had to be, you know, are you reporting on the COVID expenditures? Are you tracking the COVID payroll? So it was kind of a little bit harder to draw a line. So my hope in this is some sort of clear percentage would be authorized, because I think that we're talking just the magnitude of amount of money is so much larger than CRF that you are going to need that kind of assistance, an administrative, either a consultant or somebody new on staff or whatever. I think that that's going to be just good practice.
Just want to remind our local governments, certainly Land O'Sky is there to help assist you if you need some administrative help with this opportunity or others. So, you know, never hesitate to reach out to us. Although we have a small staff, we'll try to support you if we can. So I think, Paige, that's a great component. But if we think about getting this money out quickly, smartly, and meeting all the program compliance requirements, you know, that does take some bandwidth to do that. We're closing in on 2:00. Don't want to keep everyone too long. There was a question about sharing that PowerPoint. Amber, if it's possible, maybe could you send me the PowerPoint? And if folks want that, they can reach out to me at nathan@landosky.org. We'll try to get it posted on our website. We're a little behind on posting the resources from these calls, but you can just reach out directly to me and I will share that with you. Councilman Kasky from the town of Mills River mentioned some of the broadband work that's going on here and maybe, you know, the opportunity to scale some of our existing work. So I guess the final question, and I don't think hopefully I haven't missed any other questions in the chat, but how do you think of the opportunity to start a new initiative or to take an existing initiative that a local government is already working on and scale that? How do you, for that decision matrix, have y'all thought about that, of how that could work for our cities, towns, and counties?
Yeah, I think those infrastructure investments and that allowable use is absolutely, this is the right time. Like if you've been thinking about this and where you have the legal authority from the state or the federal government, I think it absolutely makes sense to scale up those projects.
The one of the cautionary things that we've talked about at the league is that there are clawback provisions in the law. So if you use this money contrary to whatever guidance we end up getting from the Department of Treasury, you will be required to pay that back. So that's one of the first things that we want to tell everyone. Think about how you do it within the context of the law, but also think about how it works within the guidance And we're actually part of the session we're going to have with the League of Municipalities next week is we're going to share some of those horror stories where people thought they did everything right on spending federal dollars and they ended up having to pay it back, even though they followed what they thought were all the rules. So just whatever you do, take a deep breath, think about the processes, make sure that you're doing it properly, and don't commit yourself to any expenses beyond this one-time opportunity. That's another thing to think about. The other thing that we talked about at the League is think about regional collaboration around this. There are real opportunities to work together. One of the provisions in the law allows you to actually work with your state government. So for example, if there's a transportation project that you're interested in, this law would allow you to transfer the funds to the State Department of Transportation potentially to do the work for you. So that's another way to look at these investments, doing things that don't require a long-term expenditure or investment on your part after this one-time money is been spent. So those are some of the cautionary tales that we're talking about. And the other thing, transparency, and we've talked a lot about this over the last few days, is that the whole world is going to be watching what we do with this money. And the last thing in the world we want is for this to become clickbait for how government wastes dollars. So we're encouraging everyone to be very transparent on how you use this money as well.
Amber, any final thoughts? Paige, any final thoughts? That's a good way to end it. You were talking about the compliance part. You were giving me a headache, Bo. as someone who administers federal programs, you sort of wake up in the middle of the night worrying, did I do everything I was supposed to do? Did I meet all those compliance responsibilities? But Amber, Paige, any final thoughts?
No, I think Bo summed it up nicely. Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Paige?
Oh, I was just going to say, thanks for letting me tune in. I was just interested in the conversation. This was good to hear y'all's questions. I appreciate it.
Well, we would encourage you maybe in the next couple of weeks, next month or so, when we get more guidance, when the Treasury comes out with regs, if y'all could join us at a future date. I know the League and the Association will be having also meetings on this, but we appreciate you working with the regional councils. I know you're working with, I'm sure, other regional councils across the state, and we appreciate love the comment by Bo to talk about regional collaboration, because that's, at the end of the day, that's what hopefully we're all about, how we can work together to get to a better place in our region. And we're very grateful for our 20 member local governments and all those across the state that are trying to get this right. So thank you for y'all's leadership. Thank you for joining us, everyone. Thank you for being a part of today's call. If you have any further questions, you certainly can reach out to me and I'll try to run those up the flagpole to the right people and get answers for you. And we really appreciate everything y'all do for Western North Carolina and our state. Just encourage everyone, stay safe, and certainly reach out to us if we can assist you in any way. We will have another call next week, and I'll be sending out the announcement earlier in the week next week on the topics that we will discuss on that call. So thank you all for joining us. Have a wonderful day. And again, thank you for everything you do.
Thanks.